history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories right there around you that really need to be told, and we have the privilege of hearing them here each week as we seek to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot, we're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The story you're going to hear today is told in a pretty new book called I Wanted to Be a Pilot, The Making of a Tuskegee Airman. That Tuskegee Airman happens to be Frank Macon, 96 years old, of Colorado Springs, Colorado. And everybody knows who the Tuskegee Airmen are now, the trailblazing African-American pilots of World War II. But you certainly weren't thinking about that growing up as a boy here in Colorado Springs. The Air Force Academy wasn't here yet. It was a long way off at that point. What was your childhood like here in Colorado Springs?
I was raised by two great aunts and an uncle. It was really great. I had a lot of fun and got into a lot of mischief, just like all the rest of the kids in the neighborhood. In fact, the book was written about some of the kids. And I always say that in the neighborhood, and I sit on the porch and I just told them they shouldn't do those things. But I got blamed for everything that happened in the neighborhood. There was a thing that the people in the neighborhood said, that boy, Ms. Macon's, will never live to be 21 because of the mischief that he's getting and the things that he was doing. And I fooled him.
I guess you did, because you don't even look 96 as we're sitting here talking. And as far as you getting blamed for everything, did you feel that was because of racial prejudice or just they didn't want to take the blame?
No, it was because I did. I did it. And
so you weren't as innocent as you sounded there, huh?
No, I wasn't. And the neighborhood that I grew up in, I still live in it, but anyway, it was very diverse as far as racial comes. There were Mexicans and very, very, very few blacks or colored or Negro or however they termed us in those days. And a lot of whites and everybody was of a lower middle class. And they all had to work. And there were gold miners and coal miners and ranchers, all of that. And that's who I grew up around. And people that were very innovative because the Depression was on, you know. Mm-hmm. And we had to forge for ourselves, and they did very well.
Well, and I've talked to a lot of people who lived through the Depression and the perspective that they have as a result. But I'm just trying to imagine where we are back in those days, because you're right by Interstate 25, but that wasn't here yet.
The highway to Denver was just a two-lane road, and part of it was paved and part of it wasn't. Of course, the railroad tracks were there, and the highway came in several years after the war.
Well, and I'm just imagining, I mean, the stories you hear about the Depression, people have a hard time finding enough food to eat, let alone gas for a car. And in this part of the country, at this altitude, you get a heck of a lot of snow. That couldn't have been easy to deal with in those days.
Well, yeah, but we survived, and everybody depended on everybody. In the fall of the year, they went deer hunting. The kids in the neighborhood, they would hang the carcasses up, and they would skin them, and we would have to scrape the hides. They would sell them for a whopping $5 a piece. And if you planted a garden, most of the neighborhood went with pitchforks and helped you dig up and plant the garden, and then you'd help the next one. So there was a lot of cooperation. We didn't see, as they have now, people standing on the corners with signs that said, please help. We took care of each other. Of course, they had things like the government finally came up with programs to put people to work. WPA and things like that. In 1935, around Labor Day, we had a flood that took out a lot of the neighborhood, and the creek that caused all the problems, they got out and widened it. And it was basically done by hand, so to speak. A drawbar with, hooked to horses and things like that. And we widened the creek and put, if you see alongside the embankment, they've got rock. And all this was done up in the mountains. They built new reservoirs and highways and things like that. And people actually went to work. They just were not laying around asking somebody to take care of them or the government or anything like that. They were just used to doing that.
And I understand you became interested in aviation at a very young age. Is that right?
Oh, yes. There was an aircraft factory that was up in the north end of town, and it was called Alexander Aircraft. They built the Eagle Rock and the Eagle Rock Bullet. Every chance I could get, I'd sneak up there and watch them build the airplanes. And the factory finally had to shut down because of the Depression. But they had the airfield up, and they would take the aircraft across the road, which was the highway, over there to the little airfield, and they would do some testing and flying them. And, some of the airplanes were successful, and they had a little problems with some of the others.
Yeah, I think people forget how primitive aviation was then. I mean, you're only a couple decades into the existence of aircraft. But so that young, you dreamed of being a pilot someday?
Well, yes, and they would take me flying, and they saw that I had expressed a great interest in the aircraft, but it was the mechanics of the aircraft that I was interested in, as well as the flying.
So what was the first aircraft you ever went up in, and what did that feel like?
Well, as I stated in the book, there was a family that lived, the Warden family that lived next door to me, and they had been ranchers and they had moved to town. And there was two girls there, and these girls were dating some of the pilots up there. And when my folks had to go to work or something, well, they would babysit me. And they would just take me out there at the airport with them, and I was sitting up there flying with them. And I didn't realize, you know, no big deal. And so I got to very early age. And then, of course, I was trying to build my own wings and jumped off the chicken house and trying to fly. And I didn't have very successful landings.
I was going to say, how did that work when you jumped off the chicken coop?
Not very successful. It's a good thing the ground was plowed underneath.
And that little airfield you're talking about, where you got your first taste of flying, I believe they're still using that area for aviation today. Maybe a different scale a little bit?
Yeah, that's where the Air Force Academy teaches their glider pilots. It was called Pine Valley Airport. They're going to rename it to Benjamin Davis Field. And, of course, as a Tuskegee Airman, we go out and talk to the cadets a lot. And I tell them this is where I made my first successful solo in high school, is off this field.
And for people who aren't familiar, you're very familiar with the name that you just said, Benjamin Davis. But for people who don't know who that is, why don't you explain his significance?
This Benjamin Davis was the, his father was one of the first black generals. And of course, he went to West Point. And then there's quite a story about him and how they didn't talk to him the whole time he was there. But anyway, then he took over and learned to fly, and with when they started teaching the black pilots to fly. It's quite a story about how that all came about. And most of the military didn't want Roosevelt to authorize the service. And Mrs. Roosevelt, she pushed for him to do it. And I called her the mother of black aviation because she really forced it. And then she went down and flew with one of the pilots down there at Tuskegee. And it's quite a story. You could read about it. Pappy Anderson, as we called him, and she flew with him, and then she come back. And the Secret Service didn't want her to do it, and then called him and tried. And he said, "Well, I can't tell her anything. And she's going to do it. She's going to do it." So, that was that. You know, of course, the success that Tuskegee Airmen had overseas was is well documented.
Yes, of course. Books, documentaries, the feature film Red Tails that you may have seen. There's a wealth of material chronicling the contributions of the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com, I have linked for you an article from the FDR Library about Eleanor Roosevelt's early support for African American aviation. And to elaborate on Frank's comments about General Benjamin O. Davis Jr., the man for whom the airstrip where Frank Macon first flew is going to be named, Davis was the leader of the Tuskegee Airmen in World War II, commanding the 332nd Fighter Group and personally flying 60 missions in P-39s, P-40s, P-47s, and P-51s. There's no shortage of heroics from those pioneering pilots, of course, but Davis took great pride in the spotless record of Red Tail escorts. Not a single bomber was ever lost when being escorted by the Tuskegee Airmen over more than 200 missions in the skies over Europe. Eventually, Davis would become the first African-American general in the history of the Air Force. He's buried at Arlington National Cemetery. A barracks is named in his honor at West Point, where, as Frank mentioned, Davis was once ostracized for the color of his skin. And at the start of November, before the Air Force Academy hosts Army in football, that airfield that is clearly visible from the Academy's Falcon Stadium will be formally renamed in honor of General Benjamin O. Davis, Jr. Davis passed away in 2002, but his autobiography is a great read. Its title, Benjamin O. Davis, Jr., American. It underscores his desire to be measured by his character and what he accomplished, to succeed as an American, as the book's jacket states, and not to fail because of color. So you might want to add that book to your list, along with Frank Macon's new book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot. It's linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we're going to hear more of the story in the book and more of the story behind the book when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.